So I'm talking today about flags, not your usual sermon topic. But flags are hugely symbolic to most humans on the planet and have been for centuries. Battles are fought under flags. Ships sail under flags. And this summer, the Confederate flag has been removed from government property in South Carolina and Alabama. And just 2 days ago, the American flag was raised at our embassy in Cuba for the first time since 1961. Secretary of State John Kerry said it signaled that we are neighbors, not enemies. So flags carry messages. They're symbols that represent nations and causes. Even car dealerships fly enormous flags because it engenders goodwill. So the question might arise, which flags are you flying? Not literal ones, but personal ones. We'll get to that, but first I want to tell you what this talk is not about. It is not about politics. It really isn't. Yeah, I'm not going to ever do that. And last week, and I bring it up because last week I mentioned Donald Trump, only to make the point that ideas precede wealth. We were talking about prosperity and how it always starts with ideas. And I said Trump had ideas for New York real estate before he ever made $1 billion. It was just a common example. I didn't mention his politics. I didn't say he was running for president. But I could feel the discomfort in the room. I'm not going to talk about politics. I do want sometimes to talk about current events or history, because I think it's helpful sometimes for us to look at how spiritual principle shows up or not in the world around us and to think about how it applies to our lives. People ask me all the time, well, what does Unity say about fill in the blank with the hot button topic of the day? What does Unity say about that? This church and the Unity Movement do not take stands on political issues. Many denominations do. They see it as their Christian duty. So far, Unity has decided it's too polarizing to try to address the issues of the day. We can't speak for everyone in Unity. We don't want to make anyone feel unwelcome, so we leave it alone. Right, Tim? You don't want your board to be wading into that. I wonder sometimes if that's the right decision. Do we have an obligation to take a stand based on what we believe? But I'm not sure it would help. Because, for instance, if you believe everyone is divine, that doesn't necessarily make it clear what to do in a situation like ISIS. So more about that next week. But so far, Unity does not issue statements about issues, and neither do I. I have personal opinions. But I don't know what's right or wrong for you. So I won't be telling you what to think or how to vote, which means you can relax as I start talking about the Confederate flag. I'm not telling you whether or not to fly it yourself. I will review as objectively as possible, and I have a lot of experience with that. What has happened with that flag historically and recently? Because I think we can extrapolate some lessons for our personal lives. It won't be controversial. I am going to assume we agree that slavery was wrong. If that's a problem for you, you might want to leave now. And it's not about white guilt, and I'm acutely aware that everyone in the room is white, most Sundays. I do think it's uncomfortable to talk about the shadow side of America's past. But this is going to be just another talk that raises more questions than it answers, so you can relax and breathe. You already know the basic news. In Charleston, South Carolina, in June, 9 black church members were shot to death at Bible study by a 21-year-old white supremacist who had used the Confederate flag as one symbol of his racism. And when he was arraigned, the families of those he killed showed up in court and forgave him to his face. And something shifted in America. In South Carolina, where it happened, and in Alabama, they decided it was time to stop flying the Confederate flags as part of their official government. Some companies stopped making Confederate flags, and others stopped selling any Confederate merchandise. Amazon, Walmart, eBay, Sears removed it online and in their stores. As it happened, the day after the shooting, the U.S. Supreme Court issued a ruling that Texas did not have to create specialty license plates with a Confederate flag just because the sons of Confederate veterans had asked for them. It was one of those weeks when suddenly it's time, when an idea that's floated around for years suddenly makes sense to a majority of people. We reached a tipping point in race relations and finally acknowledged the Confederate flag is in fact a symbol of racism and not just Southern heritage. So I brought slides of flags and I'm thinking this is dead. I should have tested it. There we go. Okay. You know this is not the original Confederate flag. When the South tried to secede from the United States and form its own government called the Confederacy, they started with this flag, the Stars and Bars, in 1861. And then they used this one. And then in 1865, they added that wide red stripe on the side and called it the Blood-Stained Banner. But this was never the Confederate flag. It was the battle flag of the Northern Virginia Army, which was commanded by Robert E. Lee. It was also a Tennessee battle flag. And for a while, it was the Confederate Navy's flag. So if you feel loyalty to the Old South, this isn't the right flag to use. This flag was revived starting in the late 1940s as a symbol of resistance to integration. That's when they started flying it on the grounds of the state capitol in South Carolina in 1961. Not because they saw it as their Southern heritage, but because they were angry about being forced by the Supreme Court to integrate schools and lunch counters and transportation. There has been backlash, of course. People who say, I'll fly any flag I want to fly. This is not the South. This is Lancaster, Pennsylvania this summer. They would gather in the Walmart parking lot with their flags and ride through town with their flags. They called it a rebel run. A poll a couple of years ago showed, not surprisingly, that Southern blacks viewed this flag as racist, and Southern whites insisted it was part of their heritage. I understand the pride of heritage. I'm proud to be an American, even though I'm not pleased with everything America has done. You probably have your own list of American activities you're not happy about, past and present. The point is, we don't abandon our national identity or disavow our history. And I understand holding on to Southern identity. My family never owned slaves. That was for rich people. But my family told stories about the invading Yankee soldiers and how my great-great-grandmother in North Florida buried the family silver in the yard so the damn Yankees wouldn't get it. Damn Yankees was one word. I grew up with people who were still angry about what they called the war of Northern aggression. Yes, two syllables, war. And I grew up in Texas, which was a slave state and part of the Confederacy. Its leaders at the time were wrong about that, in my opinion, but I'm still proud to be a Texan. Six Flags has had to grapple with this. The Confederacy was one of the six flags that flew over Texas. Six Flags uses the original Confederate flag, the Stars and Bars, and now they call that section of the park the Old South. They've struggled with how to portray that period of Texas history because the Confederacy and the Civil War were indisputably about slavery. Not states' rights, which some of us were told in school. There's been a lot of revisionist history. But when you go back and read the secession documents from each state that was pulling out of the United States, they didn't mention states' rights. They wanted to preserve slavery. The Confederacy wrote its own constitution, and they said the founding fathers of America had been wrong that all men are created equal. The vice president of the Confederate States said in a famous speech in Savannah, "Our new government is founded upon exactly the opposite ideas. Its foundations are laid, its cornerstone rests upon the great truth that the Negro is not equal to the white man, that slavery, subordination to the superior race, is his natural and moral condition." Yikes. That makes me uncomfortable even to read it 150 years later. But of course, slavery had been preserved in the U.S. Constitution when the country was founded. In part of the Constitution, slaves are considered property. In another part, they're counted as 3/5 of a person when you're determining how many representatives a state can have in Congress. Thomas Jefferson said at the time, "This will split the nation," and he was right. But the men who went to Philadelphia to write, "All men are created equal," in the Declaration of Independence, could leave their farms largely because slaves were doing the work. The White House and the Capitol building were built mostly by slaves. The early American economy flourished because the labor force was unpaid. So what do you do with a past you're not proud of? Should we be ashamed of it? Should we talk about it or not talk about it? Should we comfort ourselves that we weren't there and we didn't do those things? People cough a lot when they're uncomfortable. Did you know that? So, okay, there we go. Just help yourself. So how or when do we forgive the past or forget it? And if we forget it, are we doomed to repeat it? You know, there are Holocaust museums all over the world, more in the United States than anywhere else. We weren't there, we didn't do those things, but we remember. America's pretty good at honoring others' victims, maybe not as good at acknowledging the ones we hurt. So maybe we need Confederacy museums, slavery museums, as a place to confront the past. In fact, America's first real slavery museum opened earlier this year. It's at a restored plantation outside of New Orleans. Not just the big house, but the slave shacks and the slave jail. It was built privately by a 77-year-old man named John Cummings with $8 million of his own money. And his neighbors along the storied River Road in Louisiana have complained that his portrayals of slavery are disturbing. Their restored plantations draw white tourists and serve them mint juleps on the veranda. I've been there, it's lovely. But they don't have slave shacks. And Cummings said, yeah, his museum is disturbing because this is the way it happened. The past is never really past. The Civil War ended 150 years ago in April of this year. It was an anniversary just before this upheaval about the Confederate flag and during the protests about black men and police and race relations in this country. Did you know Mississippi finally ratified the 13th Amendment abolishing slavery in 2013? It's an uncomfortable, painful past we may not want to dwell on. And I'll just leave you to wrestle with your own views of race in America. But let's look at all the questions this raises for us personally if we expand the topic beyond the Confederacy. What's painful or uncomfortable about your personal past or your family's past? What kind of behavior is hard to admit or confront? Have you ever revised history to make yourself look better or to feel better? I certainly have. Which flags are you still flying from the past? Do they represent something you no longer believe or don't want to stand for? I'll give you a different example. At Unity of Dallas, for decades, they had an enormous cross on the wall behind the platform. And that's a cavernous place. It seats about 700 people. So this cross was 10 or 12 feet high. Most Unity churches don't have crosses at all. But this was the first thing you saw when you walked into the Dallas sanctuary. The people who were there when it was installed loved it. The minister at that time, the legendary Donald Curtis, had explained the metaphysical meaning about how the vertical bar reaches up to divine inspiration and the horizontal bar is our human experience, but the divine continues to rise above all limitation, pain, and suffering. It's beautiful. But people walking in for the first time didn't know that explanation. They just saw a cross and they projected onto it whatever it meant for them. For some newcomers, the cross reassured them that Unity wasn't so weird after all. For others, it meant Unity wasn't really different after all. And some of them turned around and left, especially the young ones. For me, it shouted, "Jesus died for your sins," which is not what we teach in Unity. So I thought having such a prominent cross made a statement we didn't intend to make. I didn't take it down. There were more pressing issues at the time. The next minister moved it somewhere else in the church because the moment had come, or she thought so. There was backlash, just as there has been to removing the Confederate flag. For some people, the cross is a symbol of God's love, and for others, it's a reminder of execution. A lot of churches have a Christian flag. Have you seen that? When I was in vacation Bible school, we pledged allegiance to the Christian flag. Did you do that, you Baptist children? So which flags are you flying? Which symbols are you honoring? And do they make the statements you want to make? This is about releasing what no longer serves us. Are you still waving the banner of something that happened long ago? And is it keeping you tied to an unhappy past? To explore what your old flags might be or stand for, you can start with the various meanings of the Confederate flag and just see whether any of these apply to your personal circumstances. For instance, loyalty to a lost cause, especially belligerent loyalty about how things should be, pride of place, pride of family or tribe to the point of chauvinism, resistance to change, intolerance, advancement at the expense of other people, resentment of all kinds, resentment of authority, of the way you've been treated in the past, feeling misunderstood, feeling marginalized, feeling unheard, or defensiveness. When I'm defensive, it's always a clue I'm holding on to something that I'm afraid is wrong. We've seen defensiveness in the backlash to the Confederate flag and the rebel runs. Before Amazon stopped selling Confederate paraphernalia, sales had shot up 2,300%. Sometimes a flag stands for the good old days. You're longing for circumstances you'd like to recreate. Sometimes your flag might be something you want to avoid at all costs. Then it becomes a chip on your shoulder, or sometimes we call it baggage. So are you holding on to any old flags that would be better for you if you took them down? Is it time? And here's a better question. What are the flags you want to fly? Remember that movie when Luke Wilson said to Sarah Jessica Parker, "You have a freak flag, you just don't fly it." Her character was this very buttoned-down, prim Manhattanite, but he saw more in her. He was saying, be yourself. You're unique. You're unconventional. Freak Flag is also a song from Shrek the Musical. All the monsters and misfits sing together. We've got magic. We've got power. Who are they to say we're wrong? All the things that make us special are the things that make us strong. Let your freak flag wave. Let your freak flag fly. So what are the flags that make you special? Maybe different, but special. What are the flags you want to fly? What flags are you keeping in storage that could be brought out into the light? A love flag, a humor flag, a silliness flag? They don't have to fly all the time. You can just air them out sometimes. And show who you really are. These banners around the room are like flags representing our divine attributes. How many of these are you flying? Wisdom, order, life, zeal. Don't be self-conscious about acting from your divinity. Let your divine flag fly. And look for the symbols that truly represent who you are and hoist them high for all to see. So let's take these thoughts into meditation with Kit.
Let's begin as we always do. I already hear the breaths being taken in. It's those big cleansing, releasing, relaxing. Moving the breath into the heart space. Going deeply. Releasing, maybe shaking a little energy off your fingers, off your hands. Breathing normally again after perhaps holding your breath as you move through maybe some discomfort. Continue to breathe into your heart space. And as your breathing returns to normal, you can take your focus to your mind's eye, the third eye. And imagine yourself going into your attic or your basement, or that long-lost closet that you've just closed the door on, that contains pieces of your life, yearbooks, old greeting cards, maybe some old love letters. Imagine as you're sorting through or looking around things, one particular spot grabs your attention. You are drawn to it. It seems to be lighter, more prominent. It is calling for your attention. Yourself to see what this is without fear, without trepidation, but with a sense of wonder. is a small box or a small envelope. And it is asking you to open it. Discover a love letter written by you to you. It is written by that divine being that you are, expressing as you. Simply says, I love you unconditionally. And everything that has come before this point has made you who you are. Is also prompting you to be more. You can let go of anything anyone else has ever told you that has made you feel wrong or ashamed. Less than, because I love you exactly as you are right now, unconditionally, no matter what. Exactly as you are, right now, unconditionally, no matter what. Fully. Breathe in deeply again, knowing that that letter, that gift, is always present. Always available. Breathing deeply. I'm going to ask you to sing for me.